This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, on the job site. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
And you're with Saturday Magazine with Taz and Janet, and we're talking about religious discrimination with a fabulous panel.
Who's on that panel again, Janet?
God, no, you made me get my piece of paper out, Taz. So we've got Catherine Dixon here from the Victorian Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission. We've got Adrian Walters from the Human Rights Law Centre, Liam O'Brien from the ACTU, and Paige Burton from Equality Australia.
I did say just before the break, Janet, that I thought it'd be useful for us to talk about employers and why the government seems to have put employers in the centre of this bill, and there's a key point. Liam, I'm interested in your analysis of that. So what's going on there? I mean, there's the politics, but first of all, maybe explain to our listeners the role of the employer in sort of setting some of these boundaries.
Yeah, look, I think it's important to understand that when we talk about anti-discrimination, really, the rubber hits the road in the workplace. The workplace is often where anti-discrimination law really gets tested out, whether it be at the Fair Work Commission or in any of the other places where these things get tested. And as I said at the outset, our movement has been committed since its inception to eliminate discrimination in the world of work. And we have a range of concerns about this bill. And it sort of flows from three specific provisions. And we talked a bit about the statement of belief provisions, and we shouldn't shy away from the fact that that really does create a whole mess in workplaces about how employers need to manage their duty to provide a healthy and safe workplace. And health is defined not just as the physical health, but the psychological health. And there are some irreconcilable problems that essentially, for a very odd situation to have arisen, that the ACTU actually is united with employers in saying this bill should not have such provisions.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So employers have been clear the statement of belief provisions are unworkable. They will actually entrench disharmony in workplaces, and they actually are irreconcilable with their obligations to provide a healthy and safe workplace.
And do the employer peaks actually support you? I mean, what about the BCA, for example, the Business Council of Australia?
I'm not going to talk for them, but they have made submissions. They have made submissions that are public in the first round, and we anticipate some degree of publicity in the second round. Some of those groups, including the Australian Industry Group, which is one of the largest representative bodies and employers, has said the statement of belief provisions are very unworkable and need to be withdrawn from the bill. So the statement of belief provisions essentially will create a set of rights for people of faith to manifest their faith in ways that would otherwise infringe on others' rights to a safe workplace.
What does that mean?
Well,
Liam?
We've seen some good examples about, you know, things that could be said in workplaces, and I'll acknowledge that the government has attempted to try and remove the statement of belief from workplaces, but no matter how hard you try, and the latest words are sort of in the course of employment, which is essentially a phrase borrowed from workers' compensation, but we believe, for example, does not stop people from doing things on company email, people that might be away for work on a company trip but not technically in work hours, or being paid to perform a particular task, could say some of the very things that we've heard this morning to a co-worker, not just on the basis of their sexuality, but indeed on the basis of their gender, in saying that women should be at home and not at work. So, you know, we have real concerns, and we share them with employers in relation to that. So that's probably, you know, if I think about sort of one set of problems in relation to workplaces, there are another couple of sets. And you know, if I was to be a bit of a cynic about what the government's trying to do in relation to religious employers, I mentioned earlier that there is a review in relation to exemptions. We know the government has said they're going to remove some of those exemptions in relation to students. We have been agitating that exemption that also applies to students should also be removed for workers. You know, we think it is troubling that a religious employer in the education sector could discriminate against a staff member based on their sexuality. That is a current problem that we've got. It doesn't matter in that sector whether the task that that staff member is doing, religion, is inherent to the job. They could be the school cleaner, they could be the gardener, they could be a maths teacher. We would acknowledge that maybe if you're doing religious instruction, then the tenets of the faith are somewhat important to that task. But really, this broad range of exemptions is problematic. So by inserting these rights now in this bill, essentially what they're sort of doing is providing another way in which employers are going to be to discriminate against existing staff, but in particular future staff. And they've extended it not just to education, but indeed now to health and aged care and other organisations. And you only need to look at the Aged Care Royal Commission and the serious workforce issues that that sector is experiencing, where most of those employers are saying, please don't assign this right to us. It's not something that we want. We want to project ourselves as an inclusive employer, one that accepts people from all religions and faiths. We know that we've got critical skill shortages in this sector, and you're going to create real problems.
Liam, this is truly very concerning.
I'm glad you agree, Tass. it is very
There is no disagreement on this panel.
But some of the people who are going to have these rights conferred upon them, should this bill get made into law, have come out with a statement. I know that was part of the Equality Australia's campaign. So I think it's Jesuit Social Services, Anglicare Victoria, St Vincent's, DePaul before Christmas, but just last week or the week before last.
Not the Sisters of Charity.
But some Catholic organisations. Yeah. I think there's Macaulay, Sacred Heart. So there are some Catholic organisations as well who are service providers, and we know that the government, the Victorian government, but also the Commonwealth government, funds religious organisations with a faith history to deliver most of our government services these days. But they're saying, many of them are saying, we don't want this. It's not going to... It's against what we're trying to do. We're trying to deliver services to everybody who needs them, remove barriers, remove stigma. So how important are those sorts of statements, and what would be the impact, do you think, for that workforce?
Well, I think it's important in particular from an employing entity point of view that employers in the sector are saying these are not rights we want. We do not want to discriminate against staff or indeed those that we provide a service to. We don't want the right to discriminate against future staff. And what seems odd and somewhat strange about this bill is we're essentially, you know, if you read the public narrative, it's about protecting people of faith. This bill explicitly provides to religious institutions the right to discriminate against somebody on the basis of their religion. So if you are not of the faith to which you are working for, you do not have any protections under this bill. This bill does not provide you any protections in relation to your, you know, faith.
So do you mean if you're Jewish, for example, and you're working for a Anglican school, that you could be discriminated against on the basis of your faith? So it works both ways.
Yep. Paige? Yes, absolutely. But the other thing it does as well is it invites those statements of belief to also be about people of faith. So the bill will ask for protections of people of faith, and people of no faith count as a belief. So you could have a bunch of atheists saying that your religion is garbage, that it's all made up, those kinds of things, because those statements are protected in one sense. But as Liam said, the religious exemptions mean that that doesn't play out equally in terms of the way that it's done.
Liam?
Maybe one other final thing. So I've sort of raised the statement of belief aspects in terms of the complex aspects in terms of work and work health and safety. We've talked about, you know, the rights of religious institutions around their rights now to discriminate against groups that would just not be acceptable and will create serious workforce issues. We touched earlier on the conscientious objection stuff, and this is very complex, and we have an existing suite of exemptions that operate in health and other sectors. And from what we can tell, they're working fine. Nobody has left an argument to say the system is broken, it's creating these perverse situations that people of faith are not getting the protections they want. The problem we've got with this bill, like what was raised before by Catherine in terms of the right to the obligations to refer and others, is that this is going to create some really confusing things in workplaces where some people might have rights to conscientiously object and others do not. And it will create conflict in workplaces between workers. But indeed, as we pointed out before, it creates real complicated problems for employers who are providing a service and not knowing, quite frankly, whether they can require that service to be provided by some employees. And actually, I fear that it could lead to some discrimination of people of faith because employers could be wary about taking people of faith on because such exemptions could exist.
Liam, that just sounds like a positive mess to me.
Well, I mean, we shouldn't be surprised. As we said at the start, this is a very unconventional way to protect people's religious beliefs. Now, if this was a simple statute that protected people from discrimination on the basis of their religion, it would have to reconcile itself with all the other suite of anti-discrimination law. Courts would be required to determine a balance. This actually starts to prescribe to courts how they're supposed to deal with it. And as has been said before, it privileges religion and people of faith's rights over other communities, and that's the problem.
Catherine, your organisation's done quite a lot of work and produced a number of fact sheets, from what I can see. What's your analysis of this? What, you know, as the peak human rights and equal opportunity agency in Victoria, what's your analysis of the impact of this bill on employers and employee relations?
Well, I mean, I just agree with what really Liam has said, in that, you know, we've been trying to encourage employers to create, you know, healthy and safe and inclusive workplaces, and this hampers their ability to do that. We want qualifying bodies to be able to also set standards and conduct rules for their members, like, you know, the legal profession or the medical profession. Again, people are, you know, limited from being able to do that. We think that, you know, this also, I suppose, puts at risk reforms that we may want to make even under the Equal Opportunity Act here, because it may, those reforms that may, for example, protect the LGBT, you know, community, if we reform our own state legislation, it may conflict with this one. And so it really hampers what states can do to better protect people's rights, because this legislation's out of whack. So, I mean, they're the sorts of concerns that we've raised and that people have raised with us.
Catherine, I'm not sure whether you want to talk about some of the... There's some very weird things going on in this bill. The religion of two, or the belief of two. So, you know, the statement of belief provisions, theoretically in the first bill, were qualified by the fact that one would imagine the courts might be required to interpret scripture to actually, you know, qualify the fact that, yes, that statement of belief is in accordance with the tenets of the faith. In the second draft of the bill, that changes to a provision, I'm sure some of the lawyers on the panel will correct me, but essentially it creates this situation where I can make a statement of belief, and as long as I reasonably believe that that is in accordance with the tenets of my faith, and I have one other person that's prepared to, you know, agree with me, then that statement of belief stands, and I have that right.
It doesn't actually have to be reasonable.
Well, that's right. Reasonableness sort of disappears in lots of parts
serious?
Of this bill.
That's something that's missed my attention.
Another weird one. The other thing the bill does that's super weird is the associates clause in the bill extends to businesses. So if, for example, you were a large sporting code and some homophobe tweeted homophobic things, and then you were an airline that pulled your sponsorship from that sporting code, the code could sue the airline for financial loss, because that person is connected to the organisation, they're an associate of the organisation,
no.
And they've lost sponsorship. Like, there's a question about whether or not, like, where that line is. So it's unlike other laws that empowers businesses to go and take legal cases under anti-discrimination law.
We shouldn't shy away from the fact that the Israel Folau case created a real set of problems for how this bill works, and a lot of people have looked at the statement of belief provisions, which the government puts out that there are these sort of higher obligations on larger businesses greater than $50 million turnover, but in actual fact it limits businesses around what is reasonable, even small businesses. So it is very problematic for business in terms of how they would manage an inclusive workforce. And, you know, I think there are some interesting arguments around the Israel Folau stuff, some which I have some sympathy around what a person is employed to do, and I think from a movement-wide perspective we have real concerns about employers that would try to constrain general actions of employees outside of the workplace. We would say in this case it's very different, but, you know, we are essentially writing these provisions for a celebrity athlete, and including a celebrity athlete who has gone through a process and said he has been satisfied, actually, with the outcome that he received.
Now, before we take a short break, is there any other gem that we need to know about?
You keep going for a while.
Keep going, Adrian.
You could keep going for ages, actually, if you let us go. Just one thing I wanted to emphasise, just in terms of what religious bodies can do and the exemptions that they have, is that a lot of these bodies receive public funding to provide absolutely essential services, like homelessness services, family violence services, health services, things that Australians rely on every day, and incredibly vulnerable Australians rely on every day. And religious bodies are being given a licence to discriminate in terms of who they provide those services to, and that's completely unacceptable.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.